It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
You should never, ever withhold rent. I mean, I think the only exception would be if a property had been condemned, because at that point, your lease is gone, and so you wouldn't have that same responsibility to pay rent anymore.
Central Virginia Legal Aid Society staff attorney Sarah Bloss reviews the hot water crisis at Ashton Square Apartments, tenants' legal rights and duties, what tenants should have done, and what remedies they still might have. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about rubber stamp justice and how to stop the abuse. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 285, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. In January, Human Rights Watch released a report entitled Rubber Stamp Justice, U.S. Courts, Debt Buying Corporations, and the Poor. This report does an excellent job shining a light on problems that legal aid attorneys and their clients have been complaining about for years. Every year, several hundred thousand people across the U.S. are sued by companies they have never done business with and may never have heard of. These firms are called debt buyers, and although they have never loaned anyone a penny, millions of Americans owe them money. Debt buyers purchase vast portfolios of bad debts, mostly delinquent credit cards, from lenders who have written them off as a loss. They pay just pennies on the dollar, but can go after alleged debtors for the full face value of every debt, plus interest, at rates that routinely exceed 25%. Debt buyers also rely on tax-funded state institutions, namely the court system, to secure much of their income. Leading debt buyers rank among the heaviest individual users of state court systems across the U.S., and various legal actions and research, including that of Human Rights Watch, have identified repeated patterns of error and lack of legal compliance in their lawsuits. Until recently, little has been done about this abuse of our tax-funded system of justice. Enter the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB. Last July, the CFPB ordered JPMorgan Chase to permanently stop all attempts to collect, enforce in court, or sell more than 528,000 consumers' accounts and to pay $50 million in consumer refunds, $136 million in penalties and payments to the CFPB and states, and a $30 million penalty to the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. Chase sold faulty and false debts to third-party collectors, including accounts with unlawfully obtained judgments, inaccurate balances, and paid-off balances. Last December, the CFPB sued a Georgia law firm, and the court entered an order barring the firm from churning out illegal collections lawsuits and ordered a $3.1 million penalty. On February 23rd, the CFPB ordered Citibank to provide nearly $5 million in consumer relief, pay a $3 million penalty for selling credit card debt with inflated interest rates, and for failing to forward consumer payments promptly to debt buyers. Also to refund $11 million to consumers and forego collecting about $34 million from nearly 7,000 consumers. Debt collectors and debt buyers that abuse the court system now know there is a cop on the beat, the CFPB. Is it any wonder that the big banks and others are trying to weaken the CFPB? With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM. We're here at the offices of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we are speaking with staff attorney Sarah Blose, and we will be talking about the recent controversy and legal dispute involving Ashton Square Apartments and many tenants who were living there. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you.
So can you tell our audience exactly what happened at Ashton Square Apartments? Take us back to the beginning and tell us what happened.
Originally, this was a property owned by Weinstein Properties. There are tenants there that have been living there, some even for decades, but a lot of really long-term tenants who really love the location, love the property. Even though it's a little bit of an older property, they're very sentimental about living there and just love it. But the property was sold to KRS Holdings, and sometime after that happened, they started to have some problems and they weren't really getting addressed. And the most significant one was lack of hot water. And this was very widespread. This was throughout two entire buildings in the complex. And for the most part, it seemed like tenants really didn't know what to do to get it resolved. So they would routinely go and do what they thought they were supposed to do, which was to go and tell the landlord, this needs to be fixed. But that didn't work. And so down the road, somebody posted a video which had nothing to do with the hot water at all. They posted a video on Facebook because they were outraged that the landlord was not doing any type of snow removal when we recently had a major snow. And so this person took video of her neighbors out trying to plow the common areas that is not the tenant's responsibility to do. And it went a little bit viral. And so that got the media's attention. It got Channel 12 in particular's attention. My best guess would be that there were other issues other than just the hot water, but that's the one that's gotten the vast majority of the attention. But the thing that really got a spark going and got someone to look into this was this Facebook post about snow removal.
So obviously the snow was the big storm that we had around the January 22, 23, 24, which really got the attention going. But when did these hot water problems begin, as far as you were able to determine?
It seems like there's a consensus that it at least started October, November, but probably further back than that. Unfortunately, there weren't a lot of great written records as far as I can tell, and that's just from talking to tenants and reading the news stories and following it on Facebook, that because there weren't any great written accounts, it's hard to tell exactly when the problem started.
So what is the landlord's duty in general in terms of repair and maintenance, and in particular with providing hot water?
To put it in layman's terms, to make it as easy as possible, the landlord has to provide you with a safe and healthy home. And so it's very obvious that that needs to include hot water, because hot water is what allows you to wash your hands, to eliminate germs, to bathe, to have your dishes be clean. So when you're eating, you're not spreading diseases or germs, that you're doing all these things that are just, it's not about comfort. Of course, that's a component of it. I'm sure when you have a couple feet of snow outside, the last thing you want to do is get in a Luke cold, as it's sometimes been called by some of the tenants there, shower or bath, or to put your young child or your elderly parent into cold water when it's already really cold outside.
So one of the legal concepts is called constructive eviction, where the conditions are so bad that it is basically as if the landlord has evicted the tenant, even though the tenant is still physically in the apartment. Would the lack of hot water for that period of time be considered a constructive eviction? And if the tenant considered it to be a constructive eviction, what should the tenant do?
So I think it could be, because I think it is an essential service and it obviously goes to health and safety. So if the tenant wanted to pursue it that way, then my recommendation would be to put in writing to the landlord, dated and signed and keep a copy for yourself, specifically what the problem is, and to give them a reasonable period of time to make that repair. And if they don't make that repair, the letter should indicate what their next action will be. And in that case, it would be that they were going to consider that the lease was terminated. But of course, there is some danger to doing that, because the landlord could go back and sue, and it would be up to a finder of fact, a judge, to determine whether that was a reasonable thing for the tenant to do. And that concerns me a little bit, because a landlord may say, well, hey, you had water, you had heat, electrical heat, your lights were on, you had a roof over your head, you know, how could this have been that bad? And there are other remedies that we may get into a little bit later that could also be exercised rather than just ending the lease to try to get the repairs made. So there is some danger to trying that, a little bit of risk to trying that, but it is certainly an option.
So what about the next possible step, which is to give the landlord what we might commonly call a 21-30-day notice? Landlords give tenants 21-30-day notices, and basically the landlord says, hey, tenant, there's a problem, fix it in 21 days. If so, the release continues. If you don't, then the lease ends in 30 days, and if you're still there, I'm going to evict you. Can a tenant do a similar thing in writing back to the landlord?
They certainly can. They can do the exact same thing using the exact same timeline, the 21 days and 30 days that's laid out in the code. There's certainly legal support to do that.
Is there a risk in a tenant doing that, however?
I think there certainly is a risk. Like I was saying before, I think the landlord could sue. And I think that there's also a concern, or I would have a concern, about a judge wondering what the tenant had really done to mitigate any damages that they may have. And that's a fancy way of just saying, you've got to make your losses or the consequences that you're suffering from this wrong as small as possible. You can't inflate them and get a windfall. So I could see a judge potentially saying, well, you had these other options that you could have tried before just ending the lease and moving on. And so why didn't you do those things and try to hold the tenant somewhat responsible?
And what would that other approach be? What in particular is the approach that would be suggested by the Code of Virginia?
It's called a tenant's assertion. And so you would similarly want to put in writing with the date on it and keep a copy for yourself, notifying the landlord specifically of what problems need to be corrected and give them a reasonable amount of time to get those repairs made. And if they make the repairs, that's lovely, it's over. In this case, that obviously didn't happen for a lot of people. And so the next thing that the tenants would want to do is when their rent came due, they would pay it into escrow at the court in the clerk's office. You want to go to the city or county where the property is. So in this case, that would be the Richmond, the John Marshall Courts building. You would take a copy of your letter and you would take your rent for whatever the next month is and pay it to, as if you were paying it to your landlord, but you're paying it into the clerk's office so that your hands are clean, so to speak. You're not trying to not pay the landlord what's owed. You're just asking the court to hang on to it until a judge can look at why this condition hasn't been fixed. Or if it has been fixed, then the money will just get turned over to the landlord.
So in this situation, can a tenant ever withhold the rent?
It's a surefire way to find yourself homeless. You should never, ever withhold rent. I mean, I think the only exception would be if a property had been condemned, because at that point, your lease is gone. And so you wouldn't have that same responsibility to pay rent anymore. But paying rent is always the right thing to do. You've signed a contract, your lease is a contract, and you have to step back and take the emotion out of it, because it's a business deal. Even though we're human beings and we obviously have emotions and strong feelings when things are not going well and they're unpleasant. So I can't think of any other circumstance where it would be appropriate to withhold rent. You're just asking for trouble.
So if you do the rent escrow case, as you've suggested, you do the written notice, you pay your next month's rent into court as if you were paying it to your landlord, doing it roughly in the same time frame that you would pay it to your landlord. What happens next when the tenant goes to court?
Right. So what typically happens is the landlord will file an unlawful detainer because they feel that they haven't gotten their rent. And that's correct, because it's sitting in the clerk's office. And so you would go to court, and typically your case is going to be heard. Your tenant's assertion will be heard the same day as the unlawful detainer. And you would go to court prepared with your receipt showing you've paid the rent, but you paid it into court, and a copy of your notice showing what you've asked your landlord to correct. And hopefully you have good news to report and you can tell the judge that things are fixed. But if they're not, then you can expect that the judge would make a ruling and give you a particular remedy. And there's several available to you, and they can include returning some or all of the rent from the time you gave the written notice to your landlord back to you, or the judge can split it and kind of give a portion of the money back to you and a portion of it to the landlord, depending on the severity of the situation. The judge can decide if you would like the lease to be ended. The judge can end that lease for you so you can move on. Or the judge can simply require that the landlord make those repairs. And it could be any combination of those things. And then when you go to file a tenant's assertion, there's a form. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to know the right words to say. You just need to know who your landlord is and their contact information, like their mailing address and a phone number. And you put on the sheet which of those remedies I was discussing, and you can pick more than one, that you would like to have the judge consider as a possible remedy for your case.
Now, earlier you mentioned that the city, in this case the City of Richmond Building and Housing Inspector, can get involved. Apparently in this case in Ashton Square Apartments, they did. Would you tell us about that?
Yes. So they are definitely were involved in this particular case, and they had been doing inspections, and they basically, their job is to ensure that the property maintenance code is enforced. And so we have a set of building codes, so to speak, that we expect that properties that we're renting out to people are fit for human habitation. And so if someone calls the building inspector because they have a concern about something that affects health or safety, then they will come out and do an inspection. And if they find violations, they will notify the landlord or the property owner and give them a time frame during which they have to get these repairs made. And if they don't get those repairs made, there are consequences. A common one is a $2,500 fine per violation for not getting those repairs made. And these things can go to court as well. The only problem with going that route, because it can be tremendously helpful, is that if the conditions are really bad and they come in and they see that it's truly not fit for anyone to live there, that it's just not safe, you could find yourself not having a great place to go. Because if it's condemned, it's illegal for you to be there as a tenant, even if you had a lease, even if you've paid all your rent. So you want to make some plans if you're going to go that route to think about where you might go in the meantime until you can get on your feet and figure out where you're going to move if the conditions are very severe.
Now, in this case, it's my understanding that the City of Richmond was actually considering condemning some of these apartments or whole buildings because of the hot water problem. Can you get into that for us?
Sure. KRS Holdings, who runs or manages this property, filed an injunction against the city to try to prevent them from condemning the building. So the natural inference is that they must have been suggesting that they had some plan to do that if this problem wasn't corrected. I actually went to court to observe, hoping to see what was going on. It turned out that the media and myself and at least one other tenant were there, but neither of the parties were there. So without any other information, my best guess is that they reached a resolution. And later that day, I noticed that on the news, they were reporting that the hot water had been restored. So it follows that there was no longer a need to condemn that property if the hot water was the only issue that would be relevant for them to condemn it. And they had, in fact, restored that to the buildings.
Now, I also understand that while this lawsuit was pending and while this threat of condemnation was sort of hanging over the landlord and the tenant and these buildings, the landlord was giving notices to the tenants. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So there was a particularly concerning notice that came from KRS Holdings, and it specifically said that they had reason to believe that the city was going to condemn these properties within a number of days. And they were basically encouraging tenants to start looking for somewhere else to go. It was couched in language that suggested they were trying to be kind of paternalistic or helpful, saying, hey, we think this might happen, so you might want to prepare. And in fact, it came out later, at least through Channel 12 News and other news stories, that the city had said no such thing, and they had a pretty strong response to that notice.
So faced with those notices, is it your understanding that some tenants just actually packed up and moved?
They absolutely did. I'm sure that that happened because there was news coverage of it where individual tenants were talking on camera about why they were moving. And there was even a local moving company called Parker Brothers, I believe, that was offering people half price on moving fees and working with other people who were lower income to actually provide moving services for free because they had been following this news story as well. So I'm sure that plenty of people felt that that was their only option given the notice. I don't think the notice was worded in such a way that it did not give a directive that you had to move out, but I think that the assumption would be pretty reasonable if you were a tenant and received this notice to think that your days were numbered, and if you didn't want to lose out on property or be scrambling at the midnight hour, that you better make some arrangements really fast.
And I assume that this notice that came from KRS Holdings that mentioned the possibility of condemnation did not also mention the fact that they would be fighting in court to prevent that.
No, it said absolutely nothing about court. I think that it may have had some language about they were continuing to try to help their tenants in some way, but it didn't mention a lawsuit in any capacity.
So it sounds as if the problem more or less got resolved, but only after the city made a major threat of condemnation, forcing KRS to try to enjoin them and then just finally fix the problem altogether. For those tenants who put up with these conditions for what you describe as months and months and months, do they have any remedy now?
So from what I understand from having talked to other tenants, it seems like KRS is trying to offer some resolution for people that's non-judicial, meaning they don't have to go through court. So for people that have already moved out, my understanding is that they are waiving some of the fees, like the February utility bills, and maybe waiving some rent. And for people who have remained, my understanding is that they're offering them some sort of calculation for this water and gas bill that they've been paying all along for something they didn't receive, to give them some calculated amount back. I don't know what that amount would be. They sent out a notice to everyone, and I've seen that as well, about how they're in the process of coming up with a refund of some sort. So they certainly have that option if they're still there to try to take that money. And it sounds like they're okay with people leaving, moving out with no consequence, even if they're in the middle of their lease or the beginning of their lease.
What about a tenant who, let's say, paid his or her rent pretty much in full on time every month for all of those months the tenant didn't have hot water, but never gave written notice to the landlord of the problem? Any possibility in your mind that the tenant could now sue for some of that back rent?
The courts are available for people to sue. I think that that's a very difficult case. I think that it's, of course, sympathetic, but at the same time, I'll go back to the fancy word of mitigation, that unfortunately, when you sign a contract and you enter into a lease, you're expected to know the rules. You're supposed to know how to play the game, and that includes knowing what the law is surrounding being a good tenant, what your responsibilities are as a tenant, and what the landlord's responsibilities are. And when you need repairs made, there's a real problem. There's a very clear path that's laid out in the law and may very well be laid out in their lease, although I haven't seen their lease to know about what you're supposed to do when you have a problem.
And what is that path?
It's what we've been talking about, that you need to put it in writing. Even if the landlord says you can just stop by and orally tell them what you need fixed, or even submit some form online as a work order. I know a lot of landlords have gone the electronic route for work orders. I think you still need to put it in writing. And another trick that you could have done is when you pay your rent, you could have put a note that you were basically paying your rent under protest because there was this continuous problem. But unless you have a record that you have put the landlord on notice of the problem, it doesn't really matter whether they knew it or not. It only matters what you can prove. And so you can't prove that they knew that this problem existed, unfortunately, because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. But I think it would be worth trying. There are several news stories that say that they have acknowledged that they knew there was a problem, I think going back to November. And so you may be able to try printing that out and see if you get a sympathetic judge that said, well, they definitely knew about the problem because they've already admitted it. I don't know how that would play out. I really don't, because I'm sure that they would hire a lawyer who would have a field day with that. But it may not be a bad idea to give it a try. If they've already admitted publicly that they knew that there was a problem, they still have just a basic contract law duty to fulfill certain obligations, and they haven't done that.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with staff attorney Sarah Blose here at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society about the recent hot water controversy at Ashton Square Apartments, how it dragged on for months and months, and how it finally got resolved, and what tenants could do now, and more importantly, what they should do if they have a problem in the future. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Veterans Aid in Attendance, available to wartime veterans and their surviving spouses, is one of the least known and yet most valuable veterans benefit programs. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Eric Jorgensen from the American Association of Wartime Veterans discusses the rules to get this benefit and the huge difference it can make. That's all for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wainwright.